Chapter 7 Moving Targets. More than 200 were here, come to the call of Cynophane, and the elf lady looked around the clearing in the center of the Glimmerwood with satisfaction and pride. When war had come, bringing the hordes roaming the borders of the forest, the elves had abandoned their villages for a defensive posture they had perfected centuries before. They called it Halaval Planeta, or Wandering Warrior, a nomadic lifestyle seeking safety in constant movement about this land they knew so well. They had spent the better part of the year, certainly since Brahm's fall, and even before that to a great extent, operating in small bands, often secluded from others of their race. The borders of the Glimmerwood were littered with the rotting corpses of orcs shot down by elf patrol bands, but in the course of these many months, only a few elves had been wounded, and not one had been killed in battle. The orcs couldn't kill what they couldn't catch. And now the orcs weren't pressing in on the Glimmerwood. Not even the frost giants ventured too far into the elf-haunted forest. Of all the kingdoms of Lurwar, this one, the clan of Moonwood Elves, had fared best, even more so than Everlund, whose walls had not yet trembled under the weight of giant-hurled boulders. The elves did not need the trade with any of the cities. The Glimmerwood gave them all they required and more.
"It is good to see you, my Lady Cynophane," said a tall warrior named Vincent. "Our lives these days in small groups. We do not know how others fare." He shook his head. "That is the pain of the wandering warrior. You must trust in your friends, though they are lost to you in dangerous times."
"By all accounts, all of the groups have fared well,"
Cynophane replied, and Vincent nodded.
"And now you would end this?" he said. "Why?"
"Why indeed?"
asked another, a deadly archer named Alifel, brother of Tarathiel, who had been killed by the original King Obuld a century before.
"What do you know?"
"That all of the kingdoms about us are in dire need," she answered. "That Sundabar has fallen, Nesme too, and Silvery Moon is sorely pressed."
She moved out more to the center of the field and its gathering, as she spoke loud enough for all to hear.
"I know that the dwarves are caught in their holes, all three citadels, and they grow desperate with hunger. They have tried to break out from Mithril Hall and Felbar, but were chased back into the holes in short order."
She paused as she came up to grim-faced Alifel.
"They came forth from the safety of their fortified citadels against great odds, indeed unbeatable odds."
"That speaks to their desperation," Alifel admitted. "No less is true of Citadel Adbar," Vincent added. "My fellows and I have haunted that region to the northeast. Many battles have been fought. The dwarves are relentless in their attempts to break the orc siege."
"Relentless and unsuccessful," another elf added.
"You have called us together that we can aid the dwarves," Alifel reasoned,
and there was a measure of accusation in his tone, though it was not without sympathy, Cynophane noted hopefully.
"If we do not, then all that we have known about us as neighbors and allies will likely perish," Cynophane replied. "Only the orcs will remain."
"Not all of the dwarves have been the best of neighbors, lady," Alifel reminded,
and Cynophane recalled immediately the incident to which the brother of Tarathiel likely referred, a most unpleasant argument with the dwarves of Adbar who had
come like orcs to fell the trees of the northeastern forest,
so the reports had claimed. The dwarves, under duress due to a great demand for weapons from Sundabar, had run short of fuel for their forges, and so they had crept down to the Glimmerwood in the hopes of taking a few wagon loads of lumber. Alifel and some friends had met them and had turned them away, but the encounter had not been without some minor bloodshed on both sides.
"Better even at that troubled time than the orcs, surely,"
Vincent said before Cynophane could, and to Cynophane's relief, Alifel conceded the point with a nod.
"What do you propose, lady?"
another elf called from behind.
"The minions of Many Arrows are grouped in vast encampments," another reminded her.
we would have to cut the trees of half the Glimmerwood to fashion enough arrows to truly thin their ranks. As soon as we sting them hard, they will come against us, of course, Vincent said.
With fire, Alifel added.
Do you believe they will not do exactly that in any case? Asked another. And Cynophane smiled when she saw Muriel walking up to stand in front of Alifel. When they are done with the cities in the south, when the dwarves are dead in their holes, when Adbar falls and they mean to power her forges, do you think they will take only a few wagons of our trees then, Master Alifel? They will raise the land without regard to feed their fiery frenzy. It is time to suspend Halaval Planeta, I believe, Cynophane said. It is time to concentrate and coordinate our warriors, to strike hard at the orcs, in the hopes that at least one of the dwarven citadels can break the siege, and they in turn can join with us to bolster their kin.
Our numbers are few, our enemies vast, Vincent reminded. What can we do?
Cynophane had no logical response to the reality of Vincent's words. He was being honest, and not trying to play a negative role or to challenge her authority, minimal as it was. She tried to sort her options, to find some way the elves might prove effective, though the smallest of the orc encampments she had seen outnumbered the whole of the Glimmerwood's elven force 100 to 1. A long and uncomfortable silence passed.
What can we do, lady? Alifel prompted.
We can try,
was all that Cynophane could offer in persuasion to her kin. To her surprise, though, that was enough.
They are cutting,
came word a few days later. A band of orcs had come to the forest's edge to take lumber for their campfires. Likely that was happening all the time now, away from this southeastern stretch. By concentrating their forces, the elves had surely left vast swaths of the Glimmerwood open to orc lumbering intrusions. But now, finally, the monsters had come to the forest within reach. Off went hundreds of elves, silent as shadows, invisible in their forest domain, even in winter, with most of the trees bare of leaves. Practiced and coordinated, they broke into smaller bands, and each of those took up positions to form a semicircle around the orcs. Perhaps 70 of the ugly brutes were at work with their axes, supported by a quartet of frost giants, milling around just beyond the forest's edge, piles of rocks beside them at the ready. A bird whistled, but it wasn't a bird. Answers came back, 2, 3, 4, as the elves took up their positions. Several of the orcs even looked up curiously, perhaps not quite as stupid as the elves believed. It hardly mattered, though, for with those few whistles, the elven bands had identified their target, and on a 5-whistle quick count, more than 200 arrows went off, a near equal number aiming for each of the frost giants. The behemoth staggered and stumbled under the weight of the blows, with nearly every shot on target, more than 50 elven arrows entering each giant's flesh almost instantly in a great moment of trauma and explosive agony. And by the time those arrows struck, each of the skilled elves had already set another arrow to a bowstring, and the rain of death began upon the orcs, sweeping outward from close to back. How they scrambled! A few took up axes and charged the forest, and fell only a few steps later, riddled with arrows. Most retreated, diving from stump to tree to stump, breaking clear and running, missiles chasing them every step. Farther out, 2 of the giants still stood, one merely trembling, using every bit of his strength just to avoid tumbling down in darkness, the other stubbornly trying to lift a rock. 5 short whistles later, a stinging swarm of arrows reached out again, and the giants were of concern no longer. Now the elves focused once more on the fleeing orcs, and one after another they too went tumbling down. In mere heartbeats, 4 giants and 50 orcs lay dead or dying around the Glimmerwood's edge, with just a handful running for the orc encampment. A few others might still be about, hiding, but the orders had been explicit, and they were not to draw swords and go out to finish off any of the wounded or those hiding.
And indeed, those orders proved prudent moments later, when the orc encampment began to swirl toward the forest like a great black cloud of locusts. So came the call to scatter, and the elves did in coordinated fashion, running off into the forest in predetermined groups of five. The orc wave rolled into the Glimmerwood without resistance. Many trees went down under orc hatchets then, the frustrated creatures taking out their anger on the living targets that could not flee. For not an elf did they find. Some groups of orcs foolishly probed deeper in pursuit, and each in turn was sent running, half of them dying, the others stumbling out to rejoin the main orc force.
"They will be better prepared when next they come to collect their timber," Alifel said to Sinifane and the rest, when at last the orcs broke off and returned to their camps.
"We killed more than 70, and a handful of giants besides," Vincent reminded, a measure of satisfaction in his voice.
"They lose that number each day to attrition, and yet their ranks continue to grow," Alifel replied.
"It felt good," Vincent countered,
drawing a smile from Alifel, who certainly would not disagree.
"They will be more prepared. And no doubt the word of our ambush will spread to the orc encampments all around our home,"
Sinifane agreed.
"To the beasts in the northeast besieging Adbar, and to those camped across the river, holding tight about Mithril Hall."
"So what really can we do against them?"
Alifel asked.
"Truly, lady," Muriel added.
Sinifane looked at her young protege and saw the pain that Muriel had felt in even asking the despairing question. But Sinifane knew, too, that the question was an honest one.
"Will 60 dead orcs and a few dead giants make a difference if King Emerus tries again to break out from Citadel Felbar?" Sinifane asked them all. "I don't know, but likely not," she admitted before any of the others could answer. "Likely not," she reiterated glumly. "We will find more opportunities to strike at the beasts."
"But will not likely prove this effective again," Alifel interrupted.
Sinifane nodded, conceding the point.
"We will find patrols and we will slaughter them," she told her people. "We will find orc scouts too far out from their allies and we will kill them. Perhaps this vast horde will be thinned by another 200 when King Emerus comes forth again, perhaps only by 100. But that is 100 fewer spears the dwarves will face."
"But will it make any difference?" Vincent asked.
Sinifane looked at him, trying to keep a measure of optimism in her expression and her voice. They had just won a great and sudden victory, at least, yet here they were, their mood as dark as the sunless sky above them.
"I do not know, and likely not," she admitted again.
"But we must try," said Alifel, nodding at her, and she appreciated his support.
"Though there is nothing more," Sinifane admitted. "What can we do to truly wound our ugly enemies?"
It was a rhetorical question, of course. They had discussed this at length, but to Sinifane's surprise, to Alifel's surprise, to the surprise of all the elves, there came an answer, and one from a source more surprising still.
"Aye, and now there's where we might be helping ye,"
said a female dwarf carrying a massive mace over one shoulder. Beside her came a man in simple, loose-fitting brown robes, the garb of a monk, it seemed. 100 bows went up and turned upon the intruders, elves whispering excitedly and confusedly as to how these two might possibly have gotten through their sentries unseen.
"Who are you?"
demanded Alifel, sword in hand, and those around him too had weapons drawn.
"Me name's Amber," said the dwarf. "Amber Grissel O'Mall of the Adbar O'Malls. This one's me friend, half a friend fear. If ye cannot say it proper, just sneeze and he'll answer to that, ha!"
Other elves, the sentries, came rushing in behind the pair, bows in hand and confused expressions clear to see. They too had no idea of how these two might have slipped through the perimeter. They, like the others, did not understand the power of the magical enchantment that had been put on this unlikely pair of companions, or the even more unlikely pair that had put those enchantments in place.
"Now, to your question of what ye might be doing," the dwarf went on. "We got a couple more friends near about that might be offering ye a bit of advice, and more than a bit of aid on that matter,"
she said, ending with a wide and confident smile and an exaggerated wink.